A badge of honor. Police officers and first responders wear badges to let their communities know they are here to protect and serve. But that's not how it feels today. And the stress of the job is taking its toll, taking lives through suicide and post-traumatic stress injury. A Badge of Honor podcast features the cast of the same name, Sam Horwitz and John Salerno. Sam, John, and the team offer the first responders workshops through their critical incident stress management teams and mental health liaisons to offer state-certified TCOL credit programs that save lives. It's time to smash through the stigma. It's time to heal from your injury, and it's time to back our blue. Welcome to A Badge of Honor podcast. Here are your hosts, Sam Horwitz and John Salerno.
Hey, welcome to the award-winning Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam. Man, Sam, it's been, Happy New Year. Let me start off by saying Happy New Year. And let's hopefully this year we really get our voices heard. And those people out there that need the help know that you are not alone through 2023. So Sam, yeah, happy New Year,
everybody! It is great to be starting another year, another great year of podcasts and interviews. And because you know, each year we say we have big goals, and the bigger the goal, I think the bigger the dent that we're making. Even though you know these holiday times has been kind of hard. Since we traveled to Chicago in particular, what's going on in that city and downright shameful conduct by the powers that be covering things up instead of telling the truth, which when you tell the truth, that speaks volumes in terms of being there for your men and women that serve.
The way they're skating around the truth is they're not counting the suicides that happen off duty out of uniform that are either drug or garage CO related or ODs or whatever. They're really not counting those. They're calling those, well, they had relationship issues, oh, they had a drug issue, oh, they had this issue. They are not addressing the point that our members are physically suffering post-traumatic stress from our daily routines. And they don't want to bring that to the public because they don't want the public to know that the officers are such under stress. They got to stop treating our law enforcement like robots, especially in Chicago. And I saw the Fox News interview today where they said 20 plus Chicago officers lost their lives, took their own lives, within a 4-year period. Now, two people taking their lives, three people taking their lives, those red flags, those alarms should be sounding. Now, Sam, me and you went to Chicago just before the Christmas holidays, just before December, where they had the other three suicides in that month. And we saw firsthand that Chicago politicians in command are not doing their job. But the officers that we spoke to in Chicago really need it. They want it. They are begging for it. They say they have, you know, they have to look outside their department to find help. That is a sad fact right there. When you have to start looking outside because the fear level is so high that you are going to get reprimanded for checking on your mental health.
Well, and it came down to also because of forced overtime, the time component. They just simply weren't given the time off to do what they needed to do. And look, you know, you and I are proponents, longtime proponents of if you're not getting any anywhere at work, you got to go outside. Well, if you're not being given the time off to go outside to get the resources and the help that you need, you're stuck in this vicious cycle. And you know, it's about breaking that stress cycle so that there's a little bit of breathing room so perspective can be built. And, you know, conversations can be had, and it just is a whirlwind. And you and I both know that number 20 over 4 years is way low. And you know, it's never a black eye on the department until it's a black eye on the department. Right.
Yep.
So, you know, the leadership has the ability to handle these things, correctly from the get-go. And if you're you have got so many people pulling and backing the blue and supporting our first responders, it's not a black eye. It's let people help you.
I don't know what the internal issues are, because some departments are really doing it right, and kudos to those departments out there that are really taking the time to really get their officers in a mental health balance. You know, they're giving their time to decompress. They're giving their time to relax and heal, you know, after traumatic incident. But these larger departments, they seem like they are just pushing our officers in an aspect to get them to the point where, you know, they're going to make poor judgments. They're going to make life and death decisions with this stress. And, you know, I hate to say that it's a political ploy to hurt our officers. I don't know what it is, but it just does not seem right. And it just seems like it's happening too much for the mainstream media not to be grabbing a hold of this and going, why are we losing over 170 officers to suicide nationwide this year?
Yeah, and you know, you and I, we made a commitment, because at a Badge of Honor, it's not about us. It's not about the team. It's about bringing forward amazing resources, whether it be a practitioner, people we have on the show, authors, books, and we put on the website. This is books. You can go there, and there's a lot of books that are very helpful. And, you know, we were just talking before the show to our guest tonight. He wrote this incredible book that everybody should read, both first responder and family member, non-first responder alike, so you understand what's going on. And we said, hey, we need a third edition, because it's been a while and there's been a lot more. But to read the stories in the book and not... it just doesn't seem like things have been curbed, because when you generate an understanding, and you can't generate an understanding unless you want to face what's going on. You want to tackle the unknown. You want to answer the questions that are going on for you. And for some people, that's scary. So they don't want to. And I totally get that, because I've been there. John, you've been there too. But we can't keep denying that post-traumatic stress and stress alone is really creating havoc and playing a part in the overall performance of our first responders. It also goes right to why a lot of them are completing suicide. So without further ado, I'd like to bring on our guest tonight, Alan Cates. He wrote this incredible book called Cop Shock. I'm going to put it really close so you can see it.
Yeah, I'll bring mine too.
Everybody, go and get the book. Alan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and Happy New Year to you as well, and to all law enforcement and first responders who are watching.
Yeah. Before we start, I just want to jump in, and I forgot to say this in the beginning intro, because this really has a value on what we're doing. I want to send our thoughts and prayers to the NYPD officers who were assaulted this week by a terrorist on New Year's Eve. One of those officers, a rookie officer, who's his first day on the job. And when we talk about post-traumatic stress, I really hope they handle this the right way for this officer, because this could either make or break his career. He just came out of the academy. I wish all the officers well, but this should be an eye-opening experience for the NYPD.
Since it is the NYPD, I think that they will do something well, because they have an amazing peer support group called PAPA, Police Officers Providing Peer Assistance, that has been running for a number of years and has been quite successful in helping officers get through the trauma that they experience on the job.
Absolutely.
PAPA is highlighted
in the book. And alluded to a bunch of times, because when I page one, I'm in. This drew me in. I couldn't put it down. John can tell you, I had read through half the book when we were traveling on the plane. A lot of the stories in here, especially with NYPD because John and I worked in New York, we could relate to. What made you want to write the book?
Well, that's kind of a long story. In one sense, I woke up one morning and I thought, well, if Vietnam veterans develop a post-traumatic stress disorder, then I wonder if cops do. And I then phoned the Los Angeles Police Department, spoke to the head of their peer counseling unit, and he said, indeed they do. And he invited me down to talk to some police officers who had PTSD. And that's how it started. And from that point on, I then went to New York and interviewed many police officers diagnosed with PTSD in the New York department, and then across the country. I wanted to see how widespread it was. So I went across the country and interviewed police officers, and I went to Canada and I interviewed police officers there diagnosed with PTSD. So it was a very big phenomenon. Now, when I started this book, there were no books like this that were specifically about PTSD in law enforcement or first responders. There were a lot of psychological studies, but I was just surprised that there weren't any books. So that gave me a lot of encouragement to go ahead with this project. And I thought that I would have it finished in 6 months. I'm a trained journalist. I know how to write. It took me 6 years. And the reason why is because there were so many issues involved, and each of them was very complex. And there were many, many studies about each subject. So I was trying to get a consensus of what is true. What is the suicide rate amongst police officers? What is the divorce rate? I would keep getting strange statistics. For example, with divorce, I would read that the divorce rate for police officers is below the national average. And then I would read that it was way above the national average. And then I'd read that it is the national average. You know, it's hard to get a consensus. So I interviewed many psychologists who were involved in research, as well as reading these. I'd read dozens of studies on one issue. That's why it took me so long.
Yeah, it's a subject matter that you can dive into and end up, you know, going in individual tunnels, and then you try and piece together the stories of the officers that shared with you and all the first responders and connect the dots. And you did a phenomenal job. And
thank you.
Yeah, and one of the stories that we're going to talk about is an NYPD officer turned firefighter, James Brown, Jimmy, as he's affectionately called, when we come back from our first break. So folks, stay tuned. We will be right back with Alan Cates, author of Cop Shock.
Move freely, America, without medical restrictions or penalty. Without medical freedom legislation in place, our rights and freedoms are one vote away from being dissolved. Move freely, America, with one voice, without fear of retribution, achieving a common goal, medical freedom. We the people make our voices heard by connecting with state legislators and engaging a constitutionally compliant medical bill of rights for all citizens. Individually, change is improbable, but as an aggregate, attainable. It's time to act with one voice. My voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
To protect our freedom, creating one voice that cannot be ignored. This requires your voice, too. Move Freely, America. Go to movefreelyamerica.org to find a chapter near you. Plug in, donate, and help our legislators defend our God-given rights under the Constitution. Move Freely, America. My voice.
And my voice.
And together with your voice, we're one voice that cannot be ignored. Donate today. Movefreelyamerica.org.
Hey, welcome back to a Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam, with our special guest, Alan Cates, the author of Cop Shock. Welcome back, everybody.
Thank you.
Sam, when we left, just before we broke for a break, we were talking about one of the chapters in the book was one of the guys, James Brown, was a NYPD officer turned firefighter, which is not uncommon because a lot of the NYPD guys flipped over to the FDNY throughout their careers. It was a better job. It was a steadier hours. It was just a better job in overall back then. So he moved over to the FDNY. And Alan, you cover his story. You immersed yourself in his story.
It was it's a phenomenal story. And Jimmy was very forthcoming in everything that he was feeling and how he got through it, had this horrible experience. As you mentioned, he was a police officer with the NYPD for, I think, about 7 years. And then he decided he wanted to try something else. So he became a firefighter. He was still a probie on 9/11. And he thought it was a training exercise when they started calling everybody over. Let's better head over to the World Trade Center. A plane hit it. So he thought, oh, it must be a small plane. Until he got there and he saw the unbelievable destruction already before the towers even came down. So he went into the North Tower and he had climbed up 20 floors. And at that time, the South Tower came down. He said he felt the rumbling. And at that point, he made the decision. He said, we cannot go on. He was carrying the hoses, which, I mean, they're incredibly heavy, and it had already been up 20 floors, but he just felt something was really wrong, and they had to get out. And so he told everybody in his crew who was with him, let's leave. We have to get out of here because this tower is coming down. He knew it. So they started down the stairs, and he met other firefighting crews going up, and they said, well, we haven't received any instructions. Well, the radios weren't working anyway because of where they were located. So, and he just kept telling them, he said, no, you got to get down. You got to get out of here. But they kept going up. And that was the last he ever saw of them. But one thing that that really stands out in my mind is, you know, you see all these disaster movies and you see there are people screaming and pushing people out of the way. You know, I have to survive. He said, that's not how it is at all. He said, when he was going down the stairs and there were, and he was bringing civilians with him and there were firefighters coming up, of course, but when they were going down the stairs, he said, you could hear a pin drop. Not one word was uttered. There were no sounds. There were no screams. People, he said, were calm. And he said, as he went down, people handed him bottles of water and he would hand it to somebody else because he, you know, he didn't need it. But that really, like, wow, that's amazing. Because, I just saw a disaster movie the other day. It was the same thing. Everybody's jumping up and screaming. And, you know, it makes you feel better about humanity, that humans really have a sense of what's going on, that, you know, they don't just totally lose control, you know, and that they will help. They will help each other. He also described to me how there was one gentleman who they were, there were two civilians carrying this gentleman down from one of the upper floors, and he was grossly overweight. There was no way he could go down those stairs, but they carried him. He said that just so impressed him that that in his mind, he just felt such a strong feeling for humanity that we will survive, that there is hope for us. So Jimmy got to the bottom, 20 floors down. And he said, I think he said he got about 100 yards away when the tower came down. And he could hear the rumble. And he knew, and he ran. He ran as fast as he could. And he jumped over a little wall. And just as he jumped, all the debris covered him. He was covered in pieces of cement. And knocked off his helmet, knocked off his respirator. And by the time he dug himself up, he said he was just covered in dust. He was choking. He had to put his hand in his mouth to claw out the ash that was in his mouth. But he survived.
Yeah, and you know, from the minute I started reading that story, I mean, I can relate to exactly where Jimmy was with me being in Tower One when the plane hit it. So, and then going, coming up through the labyrinth underneath at the plaza level into six. And it's that little wall and where he braced himself on building six, which was a shorter building in the World Trade Center complex. In my mind, I'm going over the whole thing, knowing exactly where he was. And when he just decided to jump through into the building, and it's like, oh my God, am I jumping? Is there even a floor? Just reading that story, his story was very impactful on me, and then relating to the way he felt afterwards and the things that he went through, not knowing you know, if his the engine company that he was assigned to, which was right there, engine company 10, right at the World Trade Center complex, practically, and yeah, not knowing if there was anything left, and his stress response that he had afterwards, which, you know, whenever anybody suffers a trauma, and thank you for highlighting this, and Jimmy seconded it in the book, that whenever a first responder experiences a traumatic event, there is a stress response, and it is completely normal. And the thing that I think sets Jimmy apart from a lot of what John and I see, you know, currently in the way that we're working out in the community with a badge of honor in our team, is that because he served as a police officer, he knew about Papa. He knew about the group that existed, and he reached out to them. And even though, you know, he wanted to help at first, but he was in no condition to help, he needed the help first, and he had that. And the willingness to talk about what he was feeling, the getting dizzy in the shower, having a startle reflex, and boy, do I know all about that. But the willingness for him and his recognition that I have to talk about this, because lots of folks that we talk to, lots of departments that we work with, it's the stigma is still there, where it's like, I can't say anything, even though peer support may be available. Even though now, this second edition was 2011, right?
2008.
Okay. So even though in this day and age, 2022-3, we know that across the nation, first responders, whether it be fire or police or EMS, created peer support programs and other programs to help their folks. And yet, everything that you wrote about is still happening today. Can you argue, oh, well, look, the suicides are down? Well, we don't know that. We know that a lot of departments aren't reporting. Okay, so we can't.
So is inflation. Inflation is down too. Inflation is down.
Yeah. But are you surprised when you go through two publications, because it's the second edition that John and I read, when you've written an updated and confirmed research and re-research, are you surprised that we still have this big issue of officers taking their lives?
I'm shocked and dismayed, because we have known about this for many years. The first edition of Cop Shock came out in 1999, and the second edition, as you mentioned, 2008. And I figured by the time I was putting together the second edition, a lot of these issues would have been solved, and they weren't. And there's still a lot of resistance. And I can give you a bit of an overview of why I think that is. And it distresses me, because what it boils down to is money. They don't want, they meaning cities, counties, towns, they don't want police officers, firefighters saying that they need help, and that they have post-traumatic stress disorder, which has become more common than I thought at the time, because it's going to cost them a lot of money. Not only that, but they also don't want the name changed from post-traumatic stress disorder to post-traumatic stress injury, which is a highly significant word. Because if it's an injury, something they really understand, like a physical injury, then they will probably have to grant more stress pensions, PTSD pensions. They don't want to do that, because it's going to cost them money.
Yep.
And I think we just have to shake government up and say, no, you can't do this. You know, these police officers and firefighters, they have earned their pensions. And they should be granted those pensions. When you go to workman's comp or the equivalent in whatever state it is, I have been called by quite a few police officers over the years asking me what they should do because they've been rejected. I said, yes, you were rejected because that's what they do. And I said, try not to take this personally. I mean, how do you not take it personally when you've given such a sacrifice? But try not to take it personally because it doesn't matter what happened to you or what evidence you have or how justified you are, you will be rejected at least the first time. This is what they do. And that really annoys me. Why should that happen? Especially if someone is applying for a stress pension or a PTSD pension, think about it. They have given up their career, the career that they love. And it's not just a job to them, it's a calling. So they have decided, I can't do this anymore, so I need help. And the people who are supposed to help them say, well, you know, well, we reject this because we don't believe in what you said. And they're only saying that because they want to save money. They want to discourage first responders, police officers from filing for stress pensions. And that's the bottom line. And it's still continuing today.
Well, we are talking, we're having an enlightening conversation with Alan Cates, who is the author of Cop Shock. Again, everybody go out and grab your copy at copshock.com. And we are going to come back and continue this discussion about the money and why officers are being denied. So stay tuned, everybody. We will be right back.
Interested in starting a podcast or TV show? Worried about what you'll say and how to keep it engaging? Think you'd like to be a guest on podcast, radio, or TV shows? Hi, I'm Susan Hamilton, owner and founder of OBBM Network, and I would like to invite you to an OBBM media training to get the tools you need for a relaxed and polished performance you'll be proud to share. Our specialized training techniques include role play, voice training, and everything you need to deliver a confident, clear, and engaging interaction. Go to offbeatbusiness.com. Go to the calendar and register for a training that's convenient for you. Dates available now, 214-714-0495.
Hey, welcome back to a Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam and our guest, Alan Cates, the Alan R. Cates, the author of Cop Shock. But we're coming back from commercial and you hit on a certain thing that I wanted to talk about was the deniability for retirement, that the cities are denying retirement benefits for post-traumatic stress. Now, what they're doing, and I just saw an article that 40 police officers, I forgot what town it was, were let go because they were reevaluated. They took another stress test or another evaluation test, and none of them passed, and they let all 40 go. They said they were not fit for duty. How are they getting away with saying, well, you were fit for duty when we hired you. Now you're on the force all these years. Now you're not fit for duty and it's not an injury. How do they get away with just firing somebody like that?
They can get away with anything.
And that's
the bottom line. What the way cities think, remember, it's all lawyers we're talking about.
Right.
They said, okay, well, let them sue us. That's the attitude. And how many cops and firefighters have the resources to sue or even the will to want to do something like that?
Because if they're suffering.
First of all, they feel it's a betrayal. And it is a betrayal. Why do they have to fight for something that they deserve?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Let me give you an example. I was involved as an expert witness in a court case. A police officer, it was a state trooper, and some guy comes up to his car and points a shotgun at him, like right at his face. Luckily, the police officer was faster and he shot him and killed him. As a result of that severe trauma, the police officer just couldn't go on with his job. And he eventually applied for a stress pension based on a PTSD diagnosis. And I saw all the paperwork that was involved. There was no question that he had PTSD. But workman's comp, or the equivalent of that in Arizona, and said, no, we don't believe you. So now you have to sue us. So he did. He sued. And so I was brought into the court case. And from my standpoint, it was really easy because the lawyer for Workman's Comp said that this is what cops do. They shoot people. So why should he be rewarded for something that he does by getting a stress pension? That was the logic. And it's like, oh, that made me crazy, you know.
Yeah.
She also said that shootings occur all the time. So therefore we shouldn't be rewarding him because that's the job. And then I said, no, it's not the job. I said, and I pulled out some statistics that showed that there was the number of shootings was something like 0.04% of encounters with people. And it was easy to find those statistics because it was on the FBI website.
Great.
So, you know, I pulled those out, but she didn't like what I had to say. So she attacked me and said a lot of really nasty things. And that was okay because I said nasty things back and the judge kept interfering and saying, you know, come on, guys, cut it out. But the fact is, I know that I was right. She was defending the town. They didn't want to pay out a stress pension. And at the end of my questioning by her, she said very sarcastically to me, well, you know, basically, whatever you're saying is hogwash because you're being paid for this, aren't you? And I said, well, actually, I'm not. She said, what do you mean you're not? And, you know, I used to be married to a lawyer. And she said, one thing you never do is you ask a question for which you don't know the answer. So she asked me that question. Well, why not? I said, well, because it would affect my credibility as a journalist. And this could have worked against the police officer. But in this case, I guess it doesn't. So I have to tell the absolute truth. And this is the truth. So that didn't go over well. And by the way, and the judge ruled in the police officer's favor. And this was the first time in Arizona that a police officer received a PTSD pension.
And what year was this? That?
Yeah.
What year? Say again?
What year?
I think it was around 2006. I'd have to check.
Okay. So here we go again. And so 2006, 2022-23. And the for whatever reason,
yeah.
You know, you don't have police officers from either one single department, you know, having a class action or something. You're beaten down. You're stressed out. Your brain is not functioning correctly. The last thing you want to do, the last thing you really can do in some instances, if post-traumatic stress, you know, left untreated, can get really bad, to memory lapses, the whole thing like that, is have to fight for what you should be entitled to. And again, we look at what has happened since that time to now and all of the bills that have passed, all of from federal level all the way down to municipalities with overhauls of their workman's comp systems and different things like that. You can read articles from all over the United States in these towns. And yet we're still here.
I know there is this pervasive attitude, and it starts with, let me just continue with that story about the case that I was involved with, because there's more to it. And this says everything because it's about government. I posted the findings from that court case on my website on compshock.com, where it still is. And, I was called by a number of lawyers who said, you know, we see all the case information that you have there, but we can't find it anywhere. It's not on the usual legal sources. And, you know, they're like, why? And I said, well, I'll send you everything. You know, and I have tons of material. And then one lawyer phoned me and he said, well, I can tell you why no one can find that case is because the state of Arizona doesn't allow it. They don't allow it to be published. I said, well, why not? And he said, well, then other people will use it and try to get PTSD disability cases, like, well, okay.
That
blew me away. That just blew me away. But it was the state of Arizona wouldn't allow it.
Wow.
So we have to go after government. We have to go after towns. This has got to stop.
So let me ask you, for people that are listening, whether you know your first responder family member, and you're relating to everything that we're talking about, can they go to copshock.com and find, like, you put everything up there despite it being taken down by Arizona, correct? Let me just make sure.
Or they said I had to take it down.
They said you had to take it down.
Yeah, I didn't.
Okay. So copshock.com.
Go to copshock.com. There's also a lot more information that and advice that I give to the people who want to apply for a stress pension, about how to go about it, and how to try to not take it personally, and to understand what this is about, and why you need a lawyer, and they will do it on contingency. So you always ask for that, which means you don't pay until you win.
Right.
The big issue I know with the lawyer, when I was talking to this police officer's lawyer, is I said, well, you know, what, because, you know, he said, well, how much do you want for payment? And I said, well, what happens if the police officer loses? And he said, well, then the police officer has to pay you. I said, well, that's not going to happen. That is totally unacceptable. Right. And so that's why I finally said, okay, I mean, it would have been nice to be paid for my services, but this is not about that. This is about justice. This is about what's right. And so that's why I refuse right at the beginning to accept any kind of payment.
Al, let me ask your personal opinion on this. Since we've been in these topics, we hit with post-traumatic stress, talking about the money issue within our government. And then, you know, looking at the workman comp lawyer who is obviously uneducated in what post-traumatic stress and what police officers do. Because I don't think anywhere in my academy said, your job is to shoot people. That's not what wasn't my job. They never detailed that.
Yeah, we have your back is what they told them.
Yeah. So do you think it's a lack of funding, a lack of education, or just a total blindness to the health and welfare of our officers, or a combined of all?
It's probably a combination of those, but I think mostly it's a blindness, a willing blindness. They just don't want to hear about it because it means they're going to have to do something. And imagine this, they might actually have to pay some money to somebody who deserves it.
Right.
I know I sound very cynical, and I guess I am. After 20 years of this, I'm pretty cynical about it. And I think we need to hold the state legislators, every kind of government legislator and legislators in towns, we have to hold them to the fire. And you say, you demand that a police officer, for example, or a firefighter, they put their lives in danger for you, and some are killed, some commit suicide. And now when it's time for them to say, okay, this has been my sacrifice. So, and I was willing to do it. And now you have to step up to the plate, and they say, oh, what plate is that?
Yeah.
They just don't want to know about it.
With all the information that we have had and we've learned over the years since 1999, since your first release of the book, right? Is there any way that any politician, any commander in the field today can claim ignorance on this part?
No, but they do anyway.
They do.
They pretend that they don't know about it. And then if you inform them about it, they say, well, we just don't have the money. But you have money for other things.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. We're still below the paperclips.
Why isn't this a priority? It should be. It should be part of, we hire a police officer and maybe we're going to have to pay them a pension later. That's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a pension because, you know, it's just a nightmare out there.
I was physically injured on a job. They paid me a medical disability. I was physically injured on a job. Mental injury is the same exact thing. But I remember walking into the medical district in Queens, and you know, I saw guys with neck braces on, rods in their head from neck and they were denied 3, 4, 5 times. They were walking in with walkers, and they were still being denied. I can't imagine how they laugh at post-traumatic stress, because it's an invisible injury.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's why they don't want the last word of post-traumatic stress disorder to be post-traumatic stress injury. Right. That is the key word.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and the psychiatrists who developed the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, that outlines what PTSD is, they have refused to change it to an injury. They say that it doesn't capture what it is. I think it does.
We think it does too, absolutely. Yeah, and, part of the education process, part of the understanding process that pretty much everybody that comes on the show is the understanding that if you're in a situation that you're not quite understanding, you're feeling emotions that you haven't felt before, or maybe mm-hmm. that you have felt before, but you're ignoring, and you've gone and asked for help. Because, in Jimmy's story, he did ask the fire department for help, and they said, oh, sorry, we got nothing. You do like almost the second half of the book. I mean, it starts chapter 13, what to do about cop shock. And from that point on, it's page after page of the normal reactions, looking for different opportunities, explaining resilience, what goes into that, how to find a good therapist, what that means, and reading material, groups, websites. This is like an encyclopedia with stories all together. So I John and I, we both encourage everybody, again, grab the book.
But it's Sam,
Cop Shock.
Sam, you bring it up. What Jimmy went through. I just want to flash back to chapter one with Christine. The transit officer, and this was back in 1985 when she came on.
So before we do that, John, we're going to talk about Christine in 1985. We got to take our last break, and then we'll come back and talk about, yes, like you said, this goes back to 1985. You guys are listening to a Badge of Honor podcast sponsored by the OBBM Network. We will be right back.
What is the role of American government anyway? Is the role of government to decide where I can go and where I can't? Is the role of government to work tirelessly to destroy vital infrastructure that keeps goods and services from my customers? Is the role of government to choose who can drive, fly, or ride according to mandated stipulations that threaten my body, health, mind, and conscience? Without medical freedom legislation in place, our rights and freedoms are one vote away from being dissolved. Individually, change is improbable, but as an aggregate, attainable. It's time to act with one voice. My voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
To protect our freedom, creating one voice that cannot be ignored. This requires your voice too. Your voice, your feet, your vote, not just at the ballot box, but training to be a poll watcher, precinct chair, judge, or early ballot counter, so you're doing all you can to protect the fairly counted American vote. Move freely, America. Go to movefreelyamerica.org to find a chapter near you. Plug in, donate, and help our legislators defend our God-given rights under the Constitution. Move freely, America, because my voice
and my voice,
together with your voice, we're one voice that cannot be ignored. Donate today. Movefreelyamerica.org.
Hey, welcome back to A Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam, with our guest, Alan R. Cates, the author of Cop Shock. Welcome back, guys. We were discussing a wide range of issues that we're having nationwide, and probably, and like you said, you visited Canada not too long ago, Alan. And I'm sure Canada, and I was in England over the past summer, and I spoke to some first responders there, and they're having the same. So it's actually a worldwide issue with all of our first responders. It's not just our nationwide. And it all seems to come down to the same thing, like you said. It's either money, ignorance, or uneducated people within our upper ranks or in our political field. And one thing that really got me is Conrad Weaver just put out a 9/11 movie, and there's a female officer in there who is battling. She is shunned by the department. She gets all these, you know, she's looked down upon. And then I read your book. I read your book, and the first paragraph is about Christine, who went through the same thing back almost 30 years ago. We have not changed. We have not progressed.
Now, Christine McIntyre's story just hit me so strongly. I knew right away it had to be the very first story in the book. And New York alone, I mean, I interviewed probably about 100 officers diagnosed with PTSD. But with hers, we met in a hotel room with another officer present there. I'm a trained journalist. I don't react to things. But halfway through the interview, I had to excuse myself and go into the bathroom, and I wept into a towel. That's how it affected me.
Oh, I bet.
Her, and you see from the story how she had an incident in the subway where a homeless person slashed her throat. And, you know, she was carried out by another officer and put in an ambulance, and they had to do surgery. But nobody wanted to listen to what she was feeling. And she tried to hide it all, and it nearly destroyed her life. And she was eventually hospitalized, but finally came out of it. Of course, she could no longer be a police officer, but to try to get a stress pension was nearly impossible for her. She finally did, luckily. I'm just giving a very small version of what the story is. But when you read her story about what she experienced as a human being, nobody should be treated like that. Everyone should feel that they can speak out, they can say how they're feeling.
Let me ask something. Did they give her a stress pension, or did they give her a three-quarter pension because of her injuries? Because they maybe said it was a stress pension and hit it under the injury thing.
No, they actually did end up giving her a stress pension. Yeah, they did.
Very good then.
Yeah, which was remarkable, frankly, for that time. But she fought so hard for it, and she did eventually get it. Now, right after the book was published, the first edition, I started getting phone calls from police officers who said, they were all saying the same thing. He said, I read your book, and now I feel normal. And I realized what this was about. It was about the way they're trained. And well, they told me, they said, they're trained to believe that violence is normal and that to express your feelings is abnormal. And said, now I realize it's the opposite. That no matter, you're a human being, no matter how well you're trained, you are going to feel something. And yes, you're well trained. So when you're at a crime scene, you're not going to suddenly start letting everybody know how you're feeling. But it's afterwards, when the feelings start coming in the middle of the night, you have to talk to somebody. You have to get it out. And that's the main key to dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder and trying not to develop it is talk. And that sounds like, oh, it's so simple. But, you know, for a police officer, that's not. They don't talk.
Not easy.
They don't talk to their families. They don't tell anybody anything.
Yeah, and you even highlight stories of, you know, Vietnam veterans, a couple of veterans in here, and what was occurring because of the stress on the job. And they would flash back to being in the jungle. One was in the attic with his gun looking for people, and it's incredible that, you know, you've got these stories. What hit me about it was that the willingness to talk, and that they continued to talk, and that for a lot of them they weren't ultimately diagnosed with PTSD. They had the acute stress disorder. Some of them had to go on medication. But because they all found the courage, had a coworker that would listen, had a spouse that was supportive, they avoided, some of them did attempt suicide in the book. And we read about some did complete suicide. But the majority of the stories, that's the piece. That's the piece that... time and time again, guest after guest that we have is, you've got to talk. Sounds easy, totally is not. because we've been there and we don't talk and we suck. Like Jeff says, we really suck at it. But there are so many more resources than we have back from 1985 to now, where it is literally pick up the phone and you know, you're anonymous. You know, Alan, this has been absolutely just a phenomenal conversation. You have shed light and gone deep into your journalistic research and how this came about. And I hope people and officers and spouses and significant others will reach out to you, because you and I found each other on LinkedIn. But God bless it, America, and the world that's listening. Go on, get a copy of this book, okay? It's on the screen, copshock.com. If you're listening, cop, C-O-P, the word shock, S-H-O-C-K.com. And yeah, thanks, John, for putting it up on the screen. Grab a copy from page one. You will be drawn in. Like I said, the second half of the book, if you're not ready to talk, just freaking read.
Yeah.
Let the words that Alan has put down there, let the research, let it into you. Okay. And go from there. Educate yourself, be your own advocate.
And make sure you get the second edition, which includes all the stories from the first edition and a lot more.
Awesome.
Will there be a third edition, you think, Alan?
It's possible. I've been putting together, actually, ideas for the third edition, because there's just so much that's going on.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we can help and connect, you know, even more people. We are there. Alan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan.
Again, for coming on. Thank you. I enjoyed our conversation. And folks, get the book. Seriously, get the book and get to reading. And if you're on LinkedIn, check out Alan. Connect with him there. Like I said, that's where we met. And he posts a lot of very cool stuff almost daily. So engage in the conversation, and we will be in touch, Alan. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Alan. You know, and you captured it right there, Sam. You know, just even reading that book from the first page. I mean, I'm not a reader. But you've discussed this. I'm not a reader. My reading comprehension is actually messed up because of post-traumatic stress. I have a difficult time remembering things. So I'll read a paragraph, and I can't remember what my paragraph was. Well, like, to me, to read three chapters in his book, it takes a long time because I got to keep rereading and rereading those chapters. But one thing I did find, that book from the first couple of pages pulled me in, because when he was talking about how he got choked up in a hotel with Christina, I could feel that in his words, the way he wrote it. And, it, you know, not every author can come out. And I mean, I'm like, now I'm getting chills. Not every author can come out and make you feel what he's feeling. He put the words down perfectly where you can really, I mean, I was able to picture her on the train. I was able to feel her emotion. And throughout this whole book, that's what you see and that's what you feel. And the healing aspect, you hit that hard, was, yeah, after this, after a couple of chapters, I want to talk. I want to share my experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's the whole point of why we started this podcast way back when. That was Mad Radio for so many years. And now we're a Badge of Honor podcast. And, you know, support. Keep spreading the word. Keep spreading the good work, like Cop Shock that Alan R. Cates wrote. Get it out there. And the way you can do that is subscribe. If you're watching this on YouTube, just hit the subscribe button. And if you've noticed, we have kind of switched over. We are live tonight on LinkedIn. Thank you, LinkedIn, for letting us go live, and Twitter as well. So we're kind of shaking things up a little bit in the social media. So connect with us on LinkedIn over there, and you can find it under A Badge of Honor and Samantha Horwitz, or you can just type my name in. And then on Twitter, we are A Badge of Honor One, because some professional athlete has a badge of honor. What's up with that? Come on, man. Not like we're going to be able to get that, but A Badge of Honor One on Twitter. Connect with us. And, you know, we have got a calendar full of events. So check out the website, okay, badgeofhonor.com. You'll see in the books, you'll see Cop Shock is on there as recommended reading. But we've got a couple of things coming up. First, the big change with Walk the Bridge. Okay, we are spearheading Walk the Bridge over here in Texas, really, in Fort Worth and in Rockwall. It is now the third Sunday at 3 p.m. Go to abadgeofhonor.com, click on events. You'll see it on the calendar where you have to report the address and everything.
And the news just did a nice media coverage on Walk the Bridge in Montana. So with the Walking the Bridge in Montana. So I want to give a big shout out to anybody who's in Montana doing the Walk the Bridge for all your work, because that was wonderful.
Yeah, and we've got our workshops that are coming up, and we also have our first annual golf tournament coming up. And we're raising money to provide scholarships to first responders who want to attend our programs. That's going to be on Friday, March 10th in Garland, Texas. Again, go to our events calendar. You can see everything on that, as well as additional information about Walk the Bridge. And, you know, every day, it seems like we're waking up to chaos in our first responder community. We want to let you know we are here for you. We are praying for you every single day. We have a community that backs our first responders. Thank you for joining us week after week and supporting the podcast here. To all of our veterans, thank you for fighting so we can continue to do things like this show week after week. And then for our active duty personnel, thanks for towing the line and keeping us, our nation safe. So, John, take us home.
Man, just a big shout out to our Chicago PD and our NYPD. We are here for you, along with all the other brothers and sisters across the nation. Keep up the good. Success is right around the corner. Things will change. Do not give up. Do not give up. And please talk to somebody if you need to.
And we hear you, and we will see you next week. Take care, everybody, and Happy New Year.
A Badge of Honor podcast is produced for the OBBM Network podcast and protected under copyright law. For content permissions, please submit your request to abadgeofhonor.com on the content page. For OBBM Network programming information, please call 214-714-0495 today.